A journey can be 1,000 miles or just one song. The ability to go places is often colored by where we are from. Never have these sentiments merged more clear or potent than the conversation we have today, where words like home, music, and mission take on different and more complex meanings. As we sit down with the world-renowned Basil and the Supernatural. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and like always, we are joined by a special guest. But this guest is special for some reasons that I think are going to give us an incredible conversation. We are joined by two members of the world-renowned band, Basil and the Supernaturals. Basil and Joe, thank you for joining us so much.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So we'll start with the obvious. You guys are going to be traveling into town to add just an incredible ornament on what I think is the coolest city on planet Earth, Tallahassee, Florida. The city is looking so forward to seeing you guys. We've been hearing so much about you. Is this both of your first times? Will this be you guys' first time in Tallahassee?
I think my first time, yeah.
Sure.
This will be my first time as well.
Cool.
And the band's first time collectively.
Absolutely. Yeah. We cannot wait to have you. So you can't have a conversation with a band like you guys with just any type of conversation. It really does deserve a level of deliberation. And so what I have received from your energy over the week of doing some research on you guys is I thought I was going in doing research on a band with a mission. But you guys do not seem like a band with a mission at all. You guys seem like the mission. You know, the band is the mission. Talk to me about that a little bit. What does it take to stay so committed to what you originally set out to do with this organization, this band?
That's a great question, Josh. You know, I think, well, I can't directly speak for Joe. You know, we both grew up, you know, we as musicians, as artists, have grown up with music as our vehicle. It's our way to express ourselves, and growing up with feet in two cultures, really. I'm first generation Syrian American. I'm a product of immigrants from Aleppo, Syria, personally, but I grew up in Northeast Ohio. Joe lives in Northeast Ohio. I live in Northeast Ohio. Part of the band's in Chicago, part of the band's in the Cleveland area, and part of us is east of that as well. So we're now like a collective that has grown wings here a bit. But you know, like music, something drew us all to music throughout our life, and to use it as a way to express ourselves creatively and intellectually. And I think I was playing music before there was this deeper sense of meaning. It was a way for me to form a self-identity. And that's a journey, you know, of all the artists you listen to, and then you start songwriting and you're trying a little bit of this style, you're trying a little bit of the style, but in trying to find your own sound, and what is that? And that went on for a very long time for me. I was a singer-songwriter for many years before the Supernaturals began. And then I moved to Chicago in 2010. And that was the start of the Supernaturals as like a concept. I knew I was going to be somewhere, like rooted somewhere for some time. And I started working with other musicians and kind of hashing out this bigger sound. And then in those subsequent years, the crisis in Syria and the Arab Spring broke out. There was this discovery process of like, what does it mean to be an artist when something like that is even happening? And you have this identity that's connected to it. And all the music I was playing was about, you know, whatever my, you know, younger adolescent self was dealing with of growing up and, you know, wanting to get out of a cubicle and whatever it was. Like it was very focused on self-discovery and that personality piece. And now it needed to take a different form as like an emergency response to what was happening with my family, with my heritage and my personal identity. Like now this whole thing that I spent so much of my life, like fitting in as a person, as an Arab American person in America, and like adopting the parts of my upbringing and infusing that into my sound, and suddenly everything took on a really different shape once the Arab Spring broke out.
You know, that was a perfect segue to my next question. First of all, you brought up like this type of multi-identity that you've had to move through the world with. When we hear this reflected in your music or in you all's music, is that where that fusion sound comes from? The fact that the leader of this band has always had to live in a duality and sometimes even more than that?
That is certainly part of it, without a doubt. I mean, I think a lot of the musicians also just that I've worked with in this group, Joe in particular, these are incredibly well-educated musicians that have learned. They've been given a paint kit, a watercolor paint kit. We're bringing a canvas with any sort of song that we're working on or any performance that we're preparing for, and we're figuring out what is the right palette. Mm. How do we create the right colors that help to actually tell this story and bring this narrative together? It's less about like how do we represent culture A and culture B in the proper way, and more about like what is the story being told in a song. Sometimes it's about a character. It's about a cousin of mine that I lost tragically in Syria, for example. And that is a story that is not about me, but it has its narrative and a personal connection to it. And then my own parallel experience, how do we tell that story? What are the colors that we add into this canvas to help tell that story? And I think that's where you really get this fusion. Some songs are about Aleppo. You know, for example, that song is about celebrating the heritage of mm-hmm. the oldest city on earth. And we're telling that story, and it has to have a certain energy that you carry with it. I think we're just now figuring out more of how do you authentically infuse the cultural piece to it. I think that's something I've always struggled with, Arabic being a second language for me. I speak Arabic, but it's always been a second language. So when I think about art and in innovating and creating, I think in English. So I'm like translating it to Arabic for the first time, and I'm trying to figure out how to tell the story with this revision to it. I think that we're now getting to a whole nother layer of it.
I have a question for both of you. I'll start with you, Basil, because you bring up an interesting point. I remember reading somewhere that you said, and I love the vulnerability and the transparency of creators. And so when you said it, it really lit a bulb with me. You said that one of your biggest challenges had been, you know, how to accurately relay this narrative and stay authentic without not being able to always be there. And by there, obviously, you were referencing Syria. How have you accomplished that? Or do you feel that you've accomplished it, or do you believe that there's more work to do, or is there just more parts of the story that haven't been told in the way that you want to tell them?
Well, really all of the above. Mm. You know, I think there's always this sense of, I don't even know what the right word is. I want to say guilt of like, there's like survivor's guilt of like, why is it that, you know, so many family members and relatives and friends and people have faced the level of intensity that they have, that I was given this privilege to be here and have this voice. And how do I like bring justice to that? What do I do with this microphone and a platform and a stage to bring the truth and the authenticity to that, to their story? I think I I'm always a kind of like writing with that lens on and trying to figure out how to highlight and uplift this stories of those who are impacted, and to try to just be present myself however I can by connecting with organizations that are doing profound work and showing up. You know, I went to Istanbul in 2019, for example, and I worked with a large refugee community there to put on professional development workshops and try to meet people where they're at and understand their experience. And a lot of these people were young artists themselves that were either using art as a vehicle to process their experience, or were trying to figure out how to like translate this into some sustainable lifestyle for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to do that a lot more domestically. You know, we came to Miami last year and we did a workshop with a predominantly immigrant and refugee community, you know, and trying to seek that more out here at home and in the areas that we tour, I think is a really impactful way to help uplift the stories of those that we're hoping to help.
If I could expand a little on that as well, It's been a privilege to be a part of this band. I've only been a member for maybe what I think 2 years coming up now. I wanted to let Basil kind of take the lead on that because I know you've been plugging at this for a minute. But the other thing that I notice is we'll go to some areas, like some of the things we'll do through like the Levitt Foundation. We'll get to access these communities that might not really have much exposure directly, at least, to some of the messages that we're saying. Someone who's like personally can tell you a story about like, hey, this is something that happened to an actual family member of mine, not just like anecdotal online stories. It's like, I'm a real person who's here now in your neighborhood putting on a show for you and like sharing my family stories with you. And we're playing some like really fun music, but there's also like this really deep message in a lot of it. And I think that's been a really valuable thing to be a part of and to see that. And then the other thing too is like sometimes there's so much going on all the time, and we're so aware of everything now with just the internet and globalization that it's like I think we're all trying to like stay as aware as possible of everything that's going on. But to be able to have somebody just show up in front of you go to a show and they say, hey, this is like my humanitarian message, and I actively have like we're doing 20 per, what is it, 20% of all our merch sales goes to the Kettab Foundation. So it's like something that an audience member can actively just be like, oh, I can, like, you're making this really easy to help the cause right here and right now. I don't have to go on this whole long thing or whatever. I can do this right here and now.
Man, those were such incredible answers. As a matter of fact, I want to take a second to play a song that we have from you guys, which is Blackwater, because I think it really encapsulates some of that answer so much. So just let the audience hear this. So when I hear that song, you know, this is what I love about music, is that it's interpreted sometimes by who hears it, even if it's definitively meaning something. And when I heard that song, I couldn't tell from whose perspective it was being sung. I couldn't tell if it was Basil, who was far away from what was going on, or if it was from the perspective of another refugee who was trying to get away from something. And I don't even While I would like you to clear it up, I don't even know that it matters, because the point of it is the music is so good that it transcends, so much so that when I was preparing my notes, I wrote Sail Away as the name of the song, because I just couldn't stop listening to it. Would you talk to me a little bit about that, Basil?
Yeah, and it's both, right? So I love to set this one up when we perform, because this one is about like such a specific location. I paint this picture about growing up and visiting my family in Syria. I used to go there every year or two growing up, and there was a park behind my grandma's house, and then like a river that ran through that park, but the river was filled up with a bunch of trash. And so I then used that as an opportunity to talk about why it was filled up with trash and talk about the many, many people that have been through the Fertile Crescent over the past 5,000 years and have slowly taken away and degraded from the natural resources that made that area as fertile as it was. And it now looks much more like a barren desert. And the reason that there's no water in this river is because of Turkey's irrigation systems. They cut off that water supply to help their own agriculture. And then it cut off that water supply from Syria. But they eventually reopened that waterway right before the war started. And I talk about how there was these beautiful pictures and park benches, and they put in grass, but I never got to see it because the war began. And the only way that I was able to visit was in my dreams, which is a fact. I woke up in the middle of the night and just started writing lyrics. And it was the water was just so full in this river that the only way to even navigate was to get in a boat and sail away. So it's predominantly that story. It's what I remember of this river in Aleppo. It's also about that river as a symbol, what it became in the war, when a lot of the times when the regime would kill different families and civilians, they put them in that river and sent them to the other side for the family members to to collect them. I mean, it's a really dark, heavy symbol. So it's really about that, my interaction with that river. But it also, there's certain lyrics in here that have to do with the Cuyahoga River in Northeast Ohio. And I actually never get to talk about that on stage. So it brings my whole experience together, like the Northeast Ohio meets Aleppo with dirty water.
I love that answer. Joe, my next question's for you. I think that you guys are powerful for a couple of reasons, but the word that I keep coming back to is either mission or commitment. And as a band member, somebody who hasn't had this direct experience, I would imagine that you are tied to this cause in ways that you probably always don't get to express. Talk to me a bit about what it means to be tied to something that might not be your direct experience, but now you see as one of the priorities of your life.
Yeah, I'd love to say like an answer, but I feel like Basil really had a really fabulous explanation of, I like the analogy of a paint kit and watercolor and kind of using that to help tell the story. I think that's a really accurate description, at least for how I perceive it, is that is my expertise. And it's a powerful message that is specific to Syria and Basil's experience. But we've just actually last week or 2 weeks ago came back from Chicago, where we've been working on our next album that I got to help co-write a couple tunes with. And it's similarly toned, but there's also a lot of, at least as I perceive it, kind of more like general humanitarian messages, which really is any of these, I think, can and could be taken in, is that any human suffering, any war-torn region should be looked at as through a humanitarian lens and not a specific region or a specific ethnicity or a specific type of people. Of course, there are marginalized people that need more attention, but I think altogether that's kind of the big pushing message, is that we're all human and we're all trying to help each other out in this crazy world.
A threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
And to add to that, with you know, is with this new album in particular, like there's clearly more issues and a rising xenophobia that we're experiencing here in the U.S. that goes much broader than Syrian or Arab communities, and it impacts members in the band, people that have been involved in this group, and our ability to travel and whatnot. So I think that's also helping everybody become a little more personally connected, because everybody in this band, I mean, knows somebody at least directly that's been impacted by a lot of the policies that are happening around us.
There's a lot
more to it now.
Yeah, even for the one tune, Sandman, which is one of Basil's tunes that he wrote, I believe it was right after 9/11 in the following years, and how you describe it as your otherness became so much more apparent because of how people's, you know, points of view of certain people from certain backgrounds changed, and what people would be considering terrorists and saying like, well, oh, that person's Arabic, so what, you know, I'm kind of tilting my head now at that person. And like you had said too, I mean, a lot of the members of the band were also like diverse, so like I know I've personally experienced like racism, and so it's a message that's like, oh yeah, this is like specific to you, but it's relatable for a lot of us.
Absolutely. My next question, which is going to piggyback on the last one, is going to be informed by the snippet we have of Stepping Back in Time. And so we have that clip. Can we play it for a second? I want this song to play.
You gotta make a sound now, we'll get down. Wanna make you read your rights, man. Time to take a chance now, stand out. The hope that we get out alive. Oh, we make it out alive. Stepping back in time.
So, Stepping Back in Time did something to me emotionally, because it's so upbeat, but it has some serious lyrics to it. And I was almost fooled into dancing, and I was fooled good because I danced anyways. But that line where you say you got to take a chance, the risk. Let's talk about, you know, some of the sacrifices that you have made, because a lot of your pats on the back come because of the awareness that you raise. But I don't think that it should be lost on anybody that you guys are taking a huge sacrifice or risk because you're tying your art to a specific cause. And if at any time that cause takes a hit, maybe you could take a hit, or if it becomes unpopular or whatever. Is that always a risk that you're willing to take? And tell me how that factors into how you guys move forward and have moved since.
It's the risk you have to take.
Sure.
It's the equation gets more complex every time we hit the road, every month, every year, seemingly something we have to be more careful. Even when you're focusing on humanitarian advocacy and building up people's humanity, that has become increasingly controversial.
Absolutely.
And I struggle with that existentially. I hate that it is as controversial as it is, which means that it's so important to challenge it and do whatever you must. I think we have a privilege of having access to a lot of these spaces. They've never even met a Middle Eastern person before in some of the areas that we've played. And so it's so important to come into those areas and establish that humanity. And the fact that I'm also a guy that grew up in Northeast Ohio with my buddies from Chicago and Cleveland and, you know, in DC and Pittsburgh, like we're all part of this American experience. And this is the story that we represent. And it's so easy, I think, for people to otherize and push an issue so much further away than it really is. And when you bring it into their doorstep, onto their stage and their community, it's so much easier to start a constructive conversation. And if that's the risk that we must take, and if that puts us in danger, so be it, you know. And I think it's historically, I've only ever had to, you know, I had that conversation with myself, and now I have more at play with a family. You know, and I think about that everywhere that I go, and you know, it's not even just putting myself at risk. Now, what does it mean if I'm not here for, you know, for my wife, for my daughter? And but it always comes back to the same place, that this is bigger than us. And if we have a platform, what are we doing not using it?
There's a question that I ask often on this programming, and it is, what is the definition of art? Or other ways put, does art have a responsibility? And I've gotten so many answers to that question, and I don't believe that anybody's right or wrong, but I have cemented an answer for myself. And I do believe that art has a direct responsibility. Art, culture, and otherwise, it has a direct responsibility. And so I just want you to hear it from me, if you never hear it from anybody else, that I do believe, no matter what it sounds like, no matter what it feels like, no matter what it tastes like, I do believe that you guys are engaging in the highest endeavor of art, because you have put something on the line in pursuit of your craft. And I think that's special, and I want to thank you for it. My next question is going to be not as heavy. And I want to talk about your influences for a while. Who influences the music that you guys make? And I know that that could come from a huge pot, because you guys are so infused with so many different sounds. But let's just talk about some of the giants of whom shoulders you stand. Who do you listen to? Who do you like? Who influences you? And that's for both of you.
I can start. I mean,
sure.
Mm-hmm. I've grown up with a very eclectic style, but I think especially as a vocalist in the last 15, 20 years, what has really resonated with me is I've been thinking a lot about timelessness, and I always come back to the greats. You know, I think about Stevie Wonder. Otis Redding is a huge inspiration for me. Al Green, Etta James, a lot of these soul artists that when you listen to them still just make you feel something. You feel emotionally connected to the experience, and there's something about it. It's not about part, you know, part of it is the, of course, the genre and the time and the era in which they lived and the story they were telling and how they connected to revolution. What I think creates this timelessness is this emotional connection to to the music and the performance of that music, because it ensures that by the time you get off the stage, you've already started a conversation with your audience. Mm-hmm. You brought them in. You brought them in as part of your experience. So I think whatever genres we hover on, bringing that piece of it, that soulfulness that connects the listener emotionally to the artist, is most key. Now, whatever song you're listening to, you hover on different genres. Some of the stuff we're doing is going to be more in the funk disco kind of, it's going to feel like you want to dance, but then you're like, there's this jarring element to the lyrics as well. You don't know what to do with yourself. And that's great. That's exactly the tension we're setting up.
The cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. So sometimes it's a little more neo soul or, jazz or even progressive at times. And I think that's where especially Joe and a lot of the artists in this group really bring a lot of flavor, because their palettes are just so extensive. So Joe, I'd be curious what your answer is here too.
Yeah. A lot of the greats you already mentioned, like Stevie Wonder, of course. For me, I grew up in the 90s, so I was like very like, I got on like the grunge train. So of course I grew up like Pearl Jam and Incubus and, you know, all those, the punk rock stuff, Green Day, all that. When I was a teenager, I got hooked on jazz. My dad gave me an album, Kenny Burrell, a guitarist, Midnight Blue was the album. And I was like, I heard it and I was like, that's the sound. I was like, that's what I want to sound like. And after that, I went hard into jazz through my teens. And then that was my primary focus for my degree, which is music performance, but it's an emphasis in jazz guitar performance. And I'm a vocalist outside of that as well. I still have to, we're going to tie in some backups that I'll be singing for, I think, this coming year. But yeah, that's been a big influence. And then after I had kind of my huge years of really being into jazz, that kind of bled into some of the other branches off of that. So things like hip hop, like Nas and J Dilla and D'Angelo, of course, which was a huge blow to hear that we had just lost him. But those all kind of tie into a lot of the feels and grooves that we do with Basil's music. And though it is funky, fresh, and really fun to dance to, secretly behind all of that also, it's like very technical music. And it's kind of a lot. I remember when I first joined and I was like trying to get a grip on some of this music, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of heavy music.
I hope that I didn't suggest that at all. As a matter of fact, that point, I want to play, and we have this in the queue too, I want to play Smoke, because I have something in particular to say about Smoke. Audience, take a listen to this. Shut it down like a movie star. Oh, I'm built for the stage. No smoking here is but the real thing. So, oh baby, baby, now don't you snooze. So the music's great, and you're not going to believe me when I say this. Nobody ever believes me for whatever reason. But when I heard that song, I heard Steely Dan, and I didn't even know that you guys were in some way influenced by Steely Dan until later in my research. And so this music is the highest of technical endeavor. This is absolute, you can tell that this is musicianship at its finest.
That's awesome that you picked that out. That's,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's like an Easter egg in there for.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I heard that song, especially at the beginning of that song, I thought that I was listening, not that you guys are an imitation, but you could just hear so much of the influence, and the fact that you guys did it just as good is the highest compliment. And then going back to Basil's answer, you know, Basil, I'm glad that you named some of the people that you named, because I would be listening to your music sometimes and I would forget. I've been a black man in the South for 37 years, and there is moments in your music where I'm convinced that you were a brother. And then, you know, I got to go back and say, oh no, man, Basil's Syrian. And that's the supernatural part of it, that you're channeling this soul. But to go back to what you said, people of oppression and people of struggle channel something in a different way. And so I'm sure it's directly related to the fact that you come from a tradition and a lineage of fighting through power, but you made me feel right at home on some of your tracks.
Thank you so much for saying that.
It's the truth.
That's really what it is. It's like I think we've seen some of the the best artists of our of several generations of you know have come from Black music. I mean, there's without a doubt about that. And seeing, especially the one that really resonated with me was Otis Redding. And early on in my Chicago experience, right at the height of this like grappling with my cultural duality, I grew up in like a little bit of a bubble because I was in a college town in Northeast Ohio. So I was surrounded by people of every, you know, shape, size, and color like around me. And I thought I was fooled to think that the world was more like that than it actually was. And once I moved to Chicago as a young adult to make it in the big world, you know, there was a lot of solitude that came with that. A lot of serious challenges that I experienced in the first few years. And then of course the war in Syria and the many family members that started to slowly disappear as things got worse and worse and worse. And I felt a really intense like loneliness in that time. And so I actually picked up this Otis Redding documentary, and in part of it, they put on this performance from 1967 of him playing Try a Little Tenderness in Norway. And it was just like unreal. I mean, like, this is like the height of this civil rights movement. I mean, there's so much happening in the late 60s. And I expected a lot of really crushing stories related to Otis Redding, but he was a serious inspiration. I'm sure there were parts of the story that were masked for TV, you know?
Sure.
But his ability to communicate to audiences all over the world at one of the most racially tense times of human history and bring them together. And the way he does it at the end of that song, it was unbelievable. He does this tag, you know, with the chorus. And then he like walks off stage and the announcer was like, Otis Redding, Otis Redding. And then Otis Redding would come right back. He would grab the mic. You know, and then that doubled the crowd energy every time, and all the barriers that were keeping people separate, keeping them from the stage. Suddenly everybody was just trying to be in his orbit and be closer to Otis Redding. And it really spoke to me. That's when I had my aha moment of whatever I write has to have this kind of energy because of what it brings out to the listener. That was really, really inspirational.
You hit it right on the head. It was like it was cloaked in his shoulders, because when I remember or realize that Otis Redding was only 26 when he passed away, it blows my mind every time, because this guy seemed so much more mature and so much more like he knew what he was doing. It was just everything about him was magical. So I appreciate you saying that. I know you guys are busy, and so I'm going to let you go. But before I let you go, I just have two or three more technical questions or fun questions for you. And one of the biggest ones is, where did the name come from? Where did the Supernaturals come from?
Yeah, the Supernaturals as a name.
As a name, I'm sorry, yes.
Came, you know, starting around 2011, 2012. It was a bit twofolded in the sense of, one element was this ability to stay connected to the music no matter what was going on. I mean, I had endured a lot, and a lot of the artists that I work with and endured, you know, the death of a bandmate of ours at a young age. I had a wild house fire. Somebody stole my car. There was a lot happening. And then we would just hit it harder and get in, translate that, put it into music, get it down on wax, do something with it. Always figuring out how to translate this energy into something was a supernatural connection between us that like nothing would hinder us. We'd channel that energy and bring it into something. And this was the result, was this project, this mission, this music. And then there's also just a bit to the sound too. I mean, we're taking the listener for a ride. We're going up and down. We're moving around and around. There's surprises, there's elements in there. Just do not go in line with your expectation from the start of a song. And I think the Supernaturals as a branding brings that all together.
Absolutely. I think that it's obvious that a lot of your mission, a lot of both of you all's mission and the entire band, the mission is awareness. But sometimes awareness can be vacant unto itself, sometimes. And so I think that it is so incredible that you guys add these educational components and partnerships to the work that you do to give teeth to the awareness. Talk to me about that a little bit, what you've been able to do in terms of building community and educating people. And I remember somebody mentioned that the proceeds from a lot of your merchandise goes places. Tell the audience about a little bit more of the things that you guys do directly for and in the community.
Yeah, it's so important to show up in community and to understand what's happening in the community and to uplift organizations that are doing impactful work and to just learn about the experience that's shaping the people's life that you're performing to. Whenever we have that opportunity, I like to take it. What's really exciting about this opportunity in particular, working with Florida State University coming to Tallahassee, is that we're also going to be spending a few days in the K-12 schools, putting on a variety of workshops and educational engagements with students in the area. And to me, these are the most rewarding experiences that we can have. There is an ongoing piece at every show. 20% of everything we sell goes to humanitarian relief to help empower refugees to build a better future for themselves, without a doubt. But also, we've collaborated with different organizations. So Ketem Foundation is the one that Joe mentioned earlier, but there's also Med Global when we just performed at their conference. We've worked with a lot of local organizations that are doing impactful work with those displaced in their communities or those who are new immigrants and trying to get on their feet. And, you know, sometimes we'll incorporate a speaker from an organization, bring them out to an event, or just share space with people, or have a meal. you know, just whatever's happening in that community, wherever it feels that we can provide that value to bridge the gaps and bring people together to just create a better sense of empathy is just the most enriching thing that we can do.
Such an incredible answer. And it shows the extent of the work that you not only do, but that you believe in. In closing, is there anything else that you guys would like to mention, either of you, Basil or Joe? I just appreciate having you on. Is there anything that you guys would like to say?
No, thank you for having us.
I mean, we're always looking for good food recommendations.
You're talking to Tallahassee's coolest socialite. So we'll make sure that when you guys are in town, we're going to send you somewhere cool. But also Kevin's going to take care of that. Kevin Maynard over at FSU. He will not have you guys out here by yourself. And so in closing, I want to close with a clip of sound from Aleppo, because there is a line in it that says, "Have no fear, time goes slow." And while I have accomplished the first part by having no fear because I'm with decent people, I have not accomplished the second thing because time has gone so fast. Having fun in this interview with you guys. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. It's been a sincere privilege.
Thank Absolutely. You.
The sky, the sunlight, baked bread is gone. By the time I get home, I want to see it with my own two eyes, like the memories.
And thank you at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time.